Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for Thursday, December 15, 2016. We'll start with an article on the front page. C-SPAN Contest Prep Blends Transcendence and Tech by Valerie Wells, H&R staff writer. Mwikwa. In his essay, Nature, Ralph Waldo Emerson put forth the idea of transcendentalism. Translating that into a movie poster sounds like a daunting task, but Central A&M High School Honors English students waded in anyway. Kinsey Merrifield searched through photos online to find one of a deer in just the right position. "I'm going to be kissing it on the movie poster," she explained. With careful manipulation and resizing, plus a background of a woodsy scene, she placed herself in front of the deer so it looked as if she were kissing the animal on the nose. The students are learning to use green screen technology in preparation for entering a contest on C-SPAN. They just read Nature in class, and teacher Chad Carroll thought it would be a good warm-up exercise to learn about the technology. "They're doing video projects for C-SPAN, so we're trying to practice the skills they're going to use, using the green screen background, and at the same time, instead of just writing about the main ideas, they're putting the main ideas in poster form. We're just summing it up in a poster," Carolyn Adamson said. Librarian Amy Edrington is helping with the project, as she's familiar with the technology, Carol said. While students were trying to capture just the right pose in front of the green screen, Edrington popped in from down the hall and reminded them to smooth out any wrinkles in the green background, or it would ruin the effect when they try to manipulate the images afterward. The C-SPAN Studio Cam contest has separate categories for middle and high school. Students make a short video of 5 to 7 minutes in which they critically analyze an issue of interest in a documentary format. This year's topic, the most urgent issue for the new president and Congress to address in 2017. The deadline is January 20th. The rules require the students to conceive of and create the documentary with minimal or no assistance from a teacher, and to create most of the content themselves. Only brief clips from C-SPAN and other sources are acceptable and must not comprise the bulk of the documentary, and all sources must be credited, including any adult participation as advisors. Winners receive cash prizes. Each of the 6 groups at Central A&M chose a topic they consider urgent for the new administration, interviewed people about that topic, and will complete their video for C-SPAN, which they've been working on since October. One group at the school chose military involvement for their topic, while another chose healthcare for cancer patients. "It's about why there should be a clinic to help people take care of the medical treatments for people who can't afford the chemotherapy and radiation," Carolyn Ross said. Her partner in the project is Morgan Jameson. MAP Grant Program Lacks Direction from State by Dan Petrella, H&R Springfield Bureau Chief. Springfield. As Illinois enters a new period of heightened budget uncertainty, colleges and universities must again decide whether to front grant money to low-income students who are supposed to be receiving state aid. A new survey from the Illinois Student Assistance Commission, which administers the grants through the Monetary Award Program, suggests some schools that covered the grants in the fall aren't making guarantees for the spring. Of the 96 colleges and universities that responded to the survey, 53% said they would guarantee the funding for the spring semester, down from 60% in the fall. Because the commission didn't receive responses from 36 schools whose students are eligible to receive MAP grants, it cautioned against drawing overarching conclusions from the responses. It is important to note that institutions that are crediting student accounts for MAP or listing the award as pending are doing so with the expectation that they will receive payment for MAP from the state, the commission added. When lawmakers and Governor Bruce Rauner approved a stopgap spending plan that's funding higher education and most other state operations through December 31st, they included money to finish paying off last year's MAP grants. No money was included for the current year, however, leaving public and private universities and community colleges to decide whether to credit students' accounts for the grants as many had the previous year. While nearly all public universities covered the grants this fall, only 2/3 are committed to covering them in the spring, according to the survey. Among those that have made the guarantee are Illinois State, Southern Illinois, Eastern Illinois, and Western Illinois universities, school officials said. Among private colleges and universities that responded to the survey, 70% said they covered the grants in the fall, but only 65% have made a guarantee for the spring. Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington is one of the schools that is changing its policy for the upcoming term. While it covered the grants for all eligible students this fall, it will only do so on a case-by-case basis in the spring, spokeswoman Ann Aubrey said. We are hopeful the state budget will be resolved and will lobby on our students' behalf with our local legislators, Aubrey wrote in an emailed statement. We're committed to working with our students to identify alternative funding sources to replace the fall and spring MAP grant funds, in full or in part, not provided to them by the state. This will be a one-size-fits-all approach, but will be personalized and take into consideration the individual needs of those impacted by this state budget crisis. The percentage of community colleges that plan to cover the grants in the spring actually went up to 39% from 27% in the fall, according to the survey. Black Hawk College in Moline didn't cover the grants in the fall and won't in the spring, spokesman John Meineke said. We don't have the resources, Meineke said, noting that the school did cover the grants last year. A majority of schools that are covering the grants said they would require students to repay them if the state doesn't come through with the money or reduces the funding level for the program. That could ultimately mean problems with enrolling for classes, transferring to other schools, or graduating for low-income students who can't afford to repay their schools. More than half of those who said they would require students to pay the shortfall or were undecided about whether to do so, indicated that a student's failure to pay the shortfall will prevent the student from enrolling or transferring with a transcript, the commission said. Forum gathers suggestions for new superintendent by Valerie Wells, H&R staff writer, Decatur. A public forum to discuss the characteristics the community wants in the next superintendent of schools was sparsely attended on Wednesday. The handful of people who braved the cold had plenty to say, however. Some of the challenges the next superintendent will face, attendees said, are a lack of minority teachers and administrators, when more than half of students in Decatur schools are minorities. Recruiting minorities to come to Decatur to live and teach has been difficult, and the board approved a job description for a recruitment specialist at its Tuesday board meeting. Other challenges mentioned include classroom discipline and the need for more support for teachers so they don't spend too much time with disruptive students, which keeps them from teaching students who are trying to learn. Another parent is concerned that the same opportunities are not available to all students, and if a child's family moves and he changes schools, the next building might not be teaching the same things in the same way. What are you looking for in leadership? Asked Paul Swanstrom, the representative from Hazard, Young, Attia, and Associates, the search firm hired by the school board. Someone who's not afraid to cross barriers, not here to further their own career, but who wants to make a difference, leave an imprint, and do what's right for everyone, said Marty Watkins, a former teacher. The search firm is meeting with various groups such as teachers, students, parents, and community leaders, and compiling a report with the comments they collect. Part of the process, Swanstrom said, is to flag common concerns that come up repeatedly. The firm will present that report to the school board on January 5th and begin searching for candidates. A list will be presented to the board February 28th, and the board will begin interviews, winnowing the list down to 5, and then 3 candidates for further interviews. When the board settles on a preferred candidate, an outside firm will conduct background checks, and the board expects to hire a new superintendent and announce its decision March 28th. Common concerns already coming to the surface include the need for someone who is involved in the community, unafraid to stand alone for what's right, even if it's unpopular, and who loves children and puts them first in every decision. A candidate must also be prepared and possess the skills to handle difficult financial decisions. When Swanstrom asked how to convince a person who meets the criteria to come to Decatur, Watkins said Decatur is a caring community where people pull together in times of need. Courtney Carson, a Decatur native and product of Decatur schools, said it sounded to him as if the people at the meeting wanted a cross between former superintendents Gloria Davis and Lisa Taylor. Davis, he said, had new ideas and a creative drive, while Taylor was a people person who related well to students, parents, and staff. If we could mesh the two of them in the next candidate, that would be magnificent, Carson said. He also said he hopes the next superintendent will realize that there are a significant number of students in Decatur schools with chaotic home lives whose minds are not on school because of the worries they have at home. Addressing that is critical and will require extra training for staff. What goes on in the classroom is a direct reflection of what goes on in the community, he said. Tax increase coming for Sanitary District, by Allison Petty, H&R Digital Editor, Decatur. Property taxes will increase for homeowners in the Sanitary District of Decatur next year, despite one board member saying he did not see the need for a hike. The board voted 4-1 on Wednesday to set the district's levy at $3.9 million, a $314,000 increase from the previous year. To offset the increase, district officials have said they will likely not increase user fees as much as planned. User fees are set in the spring as part of the district's budgeting process. They provide the greatest portion of the district's operating revenue, about $14.5 million this year. We have specific uses for property taxes. They match up with expenses, Executive Director Kent Newton said. They are for paying debt service and pension costs, and they're increasing to pay that. We have done improvements that now we have to pay for. The lone no vote was Trustee Billy Tyus, who is also Assistant City Manager for the City of Decatur. Tyus said he understood that property tax increases are part of the district's long-term plan, meant to pay for needed capital improvements. But he cited the district's roughly $36 million total fund balance, or financial reserves, as proof of its strong financial position. I've been in situations at the city where we had 5 days' worth of cash on hand, and that's not a good place to be. So I get it, Tyus said. I also feel as though, because we have been prudent with our money, we are at a point where our fund balance is healthy and sufficient, so it isn't necessary to do this as part of the tax levy. Newton said he did not think the fund balance should be used for debt service, which is better paid by annual revenue such as property taxes and user fees. Speaking after the meeting, he added that the money is divided into different funds, so there are restrictions on its use. Newton has estimated that the owners of a $77,500 home would see an increase of a little more than $4 on their property tax bill, bringing the district's total of the bill to roughly $72. Part of the reason Newton proposed a larger-than-expected increase stems from concern that the state lawmakers might enact a property tax cap or freeze. This could prevent the district from levying more to repay debt. That's a problem, because district leaders believe expensive capital costs may arise in the future if they are required to limit the amount of phosphorus discharged from the treatment plant. Volunteers Make Christmas Merry for Local Kids by Valerie Wells, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Wrapped presents were piled high in a room at Renaissance Church, waiting to be delivered to Harris School. Members of the church, which is located downtown at Water and El Dorado Streets, pitched in to buy and wrap a goodie box for every student at Harris, 300 in all. "We asked them for how many kids they have," said Stacy Watts, church administrator. Her husband, Jeff, is the pastor. "We actually go through and organize each box. Most times, what they brought was way too much to fit into one box." Members were asked to bring warm hats and mittens or an item of clothing, personal hygiene items, school supplies, candy, and a toy, and tags were available to help with sizes and wish lists. Volunteers packed and wrapped boxes destined for a boy or girl and which grade for the adults at Harris to distribute. "So many items were donated from church members," Watt said, "that they have a pile of extras to leave with Principal Shannon Ray to distribute as needed." Renaissance location downtown is a deliberate choice, Watt said, because the church's mission is to serve the heart of the city, and providing presents for Harris students to fit into that mission perfectly. Durfee Magnet School has one of the highest poverty rates in the Decatur district, and is the only building with its own food pantry for students and their family. "The past couple of years, we've reached out to our own friends and family and asked if they were willing to donate something to the classrooms, puzzles from Dollar Tree, that kind of thing," teacher Roxy Danius said. "This year, they did a writing project about gifts, gifts you couldn't purchase, like hope, faith, and love. What you can give people and not spend any money. At the end of the writing project, they put down some toy they really wanted. We have 100% poverty, and the things they want are a Barbie doll or Batman figure. Their expectations are so small because their lives are so humble." This year, Danius also went to her Facebook friends to collect a warm blanket for every child, and donations are coming in from all over the country, as well as locally. Danius's children attend Kids and Fitness, and owner Amy Steck heard about the need at Durfee from her. "I did not know the economic situation there, and that some students won't have Christmas, and it just touched our hearts," said Steck. "The two centers are always on the lookout for community outreach opportunities," she said. "We decided this year for both centers because our parents were so generous this year to children and our kids are so blessed. We wanted to do something, so we reached out to Durfee and said, what can we do to help?" The business made a commitment to fill the school's on-site food pantry with enough food to make sure no family at Durfee will be hungry over the holidays. The Women of the Moose, the women's group at the Loyal Order of the Moose Lodge, looks for community projects too, and one of their number is a school bus driver who told her fellow members that she sees kids waiting for the bus on cold mornings without hats and gloves. The ladies decided to collect hats and gloves and donate them at the first student bus garage so that drivers can keep some available. When they see a child who needs those items, they can just hand them right over, right then and there, member Penny Gavro said. St. Paul's Lutheran Church provides weekend bags of food to 90 students at 3 different schools. Because some kids might go hungry without school meals, said Andrea Gerhard, Director of Communications. With the winter break coming up, the volunteers in the Bags of Hope Ministry decided to address that need too. We wanted to be able to bring hope into their lives in a bigger way through the Christmas season, Gerhard said. While many kids are thinking right now on what they are getting for Christmas, many of these students are worried about what they might have to eat over the Christmas break, and many do not have the resources to have their needs met. Our goal is to provide a backpack filled with food items along with each a $10 and $20 food gift card, and also notes and cards of hope and encouragement from our people at St. Paul's Lutheran in each of the backpacks. The church also set up an angel tree with recipients connected to agencies including Northeast Community Fund, New Life Pregnancy Center, Baby Talk, and others submitted to the church. All 192 tags were claimed by church members, and most of the gifts have already been turned back into the church, she said. Making a Better World, Neighbors Celebrate Progress, Look Forward, by Allison Petty, H&R Digital Editor, Decatur. Before his neighborhood formed a watch group, Brad Berry's philosophy was simple. I'll be nice to my neighbors and everything, but leave me alone. More than a decade later, Barry's attitude has changed. He is the longtime secretary of the Nelson Lyons Park Neighborhood Watch, which meets most months, distributes a newsletter, holds cleanup events, and more. I have met some of the nicest people I've ever met. Just getting to know your neighbors is a huge benefit, he said. Mainly, it's just being in a position to help people around you because if everybody did that, this would be a much better world. Barry was among the volunteers who celebrated at the Coalition of Neighborhood Organizations' annual Christmas party on Tuesday at First Presbyterian Church. Neighbors and city officials enjoyed a potluck feast, holiday games, and door prizes as they reflected on the year's progress. There was plenty to celebrate, said CONO President Sue Lawson. With a $5,000 grant from PNC Bank and part of its annual $9,000 allocation from the city, CONO helped renovate rooms in more than 10 homes through its From the Inside Out program. The program teaches volunteers, including children, skills such as basic carpentry, carpet laying, and painting, while also assisting low and moderate income families. The ones who have been blessed with that have learned that on a very, very small budget, they can make a room that was cluttered and whatever become brand new, she said. The organization also launched a website this year at www.conodecatural.org. Several neighborhoods are on track to start new groups, Lawson said. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf and Decatur City Councilman Pat McDaniel also attended the festivities and stressed the importance of active neighborhood groups. I think neighborhoods are our priority, so we're going to continue to improve our neighborhoods, work with our neighborhood organizations, get their input, which is very important, McDaniel said. The city is expected to allocate more funding for demolition of unsafe structures next year, as well as continue the popular free cleanup events that give residents a chance to dispose of large items. I've always thought of Decatur as being a small town with a lot of people in it, and I think that's really true when you look at our neighborhoods, Moore Wolf said. It's people helping people, getting to know each other, and the neighborhood groups are very important for that. Decatur Township approves flat tax levy by Ryan Voiles, H&R staff writer. Decatur. The Decatur Township Board will go ahead with its plan to keep tax levies level for the coming year. The board unanimously approved the levy at its Wednesday night meeting, with a tax levy to be kept at 35 cents per $100 equalized assessed valuation, or just more than $1.6 million for the fiscal year that begins April 1st. Board members approve the levy without any discussion, but have previously stated that cost cuts and realignment of duties in different departments have eliminated the need for additional revenue. We did not see any reason to increase the levy, Supervisor Lisa Stanley said. The township levies for seven funds covering its operations. Funds being levied for include $734,220 in the general town fund, $80,869 in the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund, $235,221 in the town cemetery fund, $31,096 in the liability insurance fund, $55,324 in the Social Security Fund, $468,608 in the General Assistance Fund, and $84,820 in the Road and Bridge Fund. One option that was not on the table was lowering the tax levy. With uncertainty whether the state will live up to its financial obligation, and with Governor Bruce Rauner pushing for a freeze on property tax, officials said they did not want to risk losing revenue over a long period of time. In other business, the board voted unanimously to move all accounts to Busey Bank, the same bank where the township currently keeps money used to pay bills. The township had been keeping money at Prairie State Bank and Trust, moving it there last year from a state-run investment pool in Springfield. But keeping the money at a local establishment was appealing to the board, as well as Busey Bank promising to double the interest that the township was currently receiving. "We've been doing business with the township for 50 years," Busey Bank President Dave Weber said. "We're hopeful we can continue that partnership for the next 50 years. Local briefs, Charleston, bank fraud plea. A Michigan woman was ordered to repay just more than $3,700 to a local bank and sentenced to 18 months conditional discharge after she pleaded guilty using fraudulent checks to obtain money. Coles County Assistant State's Attorney Tom Bucher said he agreed to let Dominique D. Burks plead guilty to a reduced charge because it appeared she was duped into taking part in the scheme. Burks, 26, of Detroit, pleaded guilty to a charge of financial institution fraud, a misdemeanor. She used a fraudulent check to open an account at First Mid-Illinois Bank and Trust in April, allowing her to later cash three additional invalid checks at the bank. Police said Burks admitted conducting the scheme, but she said it was at the suggestion and planning of someone she knew in Michigan. Decatur Library Board. The Decatur Public Library Board of Trustees will hold a special meeting at 4:30 p.m. today in the Decatur Public Library Boardroom. The agenda items include considering information on a new radio frequency identification project, specifically whether to award the project for competitive bidding. A technology upgrade is being considered to improve the efficiency of the library's checkout system. The board will also consider reserve prices for selling the bookmobile. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for December 15th, 2016. Please stay tuned.